want the best coverage of the top stories in sports, The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Oh, so good to have you with us. This Tuesday, October 17th, 2023. Sam Yarnell coming up in a little bit. We'll recap the Monday Night Football extravaganza in Los Angeles. Win for the Cowboys, man. Everybody was writing their post-mortem already. Gosh. They go out and win last night. What do you know? They're a decent football team. I tell you, Chargers aren't ever winning anything with Brandon Staley as the head coach, though. Let's be honest about that. Anyway, we'll get into some of the football stuff, the baseball a little later on as well. And speaking of football, if we're going to talk about it, let's bring in our man Nick Ferguson, the former NFL safety, is here to hang out with us in the early part of the show today. Get some thoughts with him on the NFL and college football, all things Denver as well, as that's where he is. Does a good job up there. What, KOA Radio? Is that the station up there for you?
Yeah, it is, man. Appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. He does a fantastic job over there. He must. They keep calling him to host shows, so he must be doing something right. Let me start with the Broncos. Yeah, my take on this whole thing. All right, forget the fact they're 1-5 and they stink. Fine. Let's cast that aside. When I step back from this, and you're even closer to it than I am, so stepping back from it's probably harder for you. But when I step back and look at this, my question starts to become, what's the off ramp, or what's the rebuild of this thing look like if we start to figure out that, all right, we got to just tear this thing apart? What does that look like when you have a quarterback with a ton of dead cap space? You're basically anchored to him for 2 years unless you want to be able to put nothing around whatever's next. What has value here from a trade perspective if you're thinking trade deadline? You brought in Sean Payton to sort of revitalize and refresh and fix what Nathaniel Hackett all screwed up. And we see how that's gone. I'm just trying to figure out how you fix it if you're the Broncos. And I know the player in you is going to say, well, one game at a time, one practice at a time, that sort of thing. I just don't know how you fix this right now, Nick. And that's kind of where I'm at. It's less about who stinks, who's right, who's wrong. It's not even so much hot takes. I'm just looking at the city of Denver and this football team and saying, how does this ever get better?
Well, being a former player, I would never tell you that. If you ever heard that come out of my mouth, call my wife because someone is taking over my body. First and foremost, I'll say this. It is a change of culture that's needed, and it dates back to Vic Fangio. As a guy who's been here that long, for me, it is the guys don't know how to win. And that is something that can come from the coach. But also the biggest issue with the culture is, who are your leaders? What are they kind of presenting to the younger players? And some of the leaders in the locker room or perceived leaders are doing anything but. And the one thing about young players, when they come in the league, they're looking to their veterans to lead them. And you can either lead a guy down their path of positivity or negativity. And being as though you're losing, it only compounds things because the four walls are closing in. So what Sean Payton has to do, it starts with the quarterback position. Here in Denver, the fan base wants the team to tank. Now, it's a double-edged sword. If they win, they are affecting their top-ranked, you know, draft status. But if they lose, the fans are still upset. So I'm like, well, what do you want? I mean, what do you want the team to do? So knowing as though they are still tied to Russell Wilson, the idea is continue to build around him. And I know most of the times when teams are not performing well, everyone's like, tear it down, rip it up, burn it up. They have their tiki torches and pitchforks, but you can't do that. And we've seen NFL franchise after NFL franchise try to use that as a way of remedying what's happening on the field. If you ever watch one of those home makeover shows, they don't just tear down the whole freaking house. It's kind of a makeover, if you will. They change the lawn. They make it look more aesthetically appealing. They go in and they change the kitchen, and there's an upgrade in the master bedroom. Those are the type of renovations that the Broncos actually need. this offensive line, which we thought was going to be renovated, it hasn't lived up to that because they continue to struggle, which puts pressure on Russell Wilson. But now Sean Payton has started that about a week ago when he got rid of Randy Gregory. Follow that up by realizing, well, you know what? We made another mistake with Frank Clark. And fans are like, why they keep making mistakes? Fire everyone. But here's the part that I love about it. At some point in life, we're all going to make mistakes. But the biggest thing is, can you admit the mistake that you made and move on? Or you continue to live with that mistake, allowing it to get you more in debt. So the Broncos have started that movement, but now October 31st is vastly approaching. So what happens with Courtland Sutton? What happens with Justin Simmons? What happens with Jerry Jeudy? I don't see them making a move with Russell Wilson because they're not going to be able to make it. And here in Denver, we have local media keep pounding the table. Well, the guy that has the highest value is Patrick Surtain. Trade him. I'm like, that's the most idiotic thing I've ever heard.
First of all, we learned something new on the show today. Clearly, Nick Ferguson is a fan of HGTV. And loves watching home decoration and remodeling shows. That's the first thing we've learned on the show. The second thing we've learned is, you know, what this team is going to do at the trade deadline. You know, you're looking to see how guys are playing as we get in there, what, 2 weeks out basically from the trade deadline. So you start to look and see who is a candidate. You know, I don't know who's going to want Jerry Jeudy. Somebody might look at him and say, hey, we, you know, get him into a fresh situation, get him into a place with a better system, a better culture, because all Jerry Jeudy knows is losing. So maybe if you get him into a place like Kansas City, would Denver trade him within the division? I don't know, because the Chiefs clearly need some help at the receiver position, because outside of Travis Kelce, who's consistently going to be able to catch footballs for that team. If they determine they need somebody, maybe Judy's a possibility there. Maybe a Courtland Sutton. I mean, again, if the Broncos are willing to trade within the division. But like I said, you could talk tank all you want, Nick. Not you per se, but the fan base can talk tank all you want. Fine, go and get Caleb Williams. You still have Russell Wilson, who's making a ton of money, and the dead cap space. Fans don't realize this. Not enough fans understand what happens and the salary cap hell they go into. Not that they're already, you know, not in a salary cap hell because of what they're paying Russell Wilson, but the hell that that team's going to face if they cut him or trade him or any of this stuff. Fine, bring in Caleb Williams and make him your new, you know, starting quarterback, or Penix, or whoever you're going to go and get in this upcoming draft. You have to have people to surround him with, and you're not going to be able to surround anybody around whatever quarterback situation you have if you are in the salary cap hell that they're going to be in.
Well, you know, you can't do that, and let me address the whole thing of tanking for Caleb Williams. I mean, so many teams and fans think that, okay, we get the number one overall pick, or you have a pick in the top five picks, let's go out and draft a quarterback, because usually that's where quarterbacks are drafted. So if you're drafting a quarterback that high, that means your team was terrible the year before. And there's a possibility you could be right back there in a couple of years. That quarterback is not going to resolve all of your issues. If you can't protect your quarterback and you can't get after your quarterback, guess what? You're going to be drafting another quarterback. So because the Broncos are in the situation they're in with Russell from a contractual standpoint, the only thing you can do is try to cut bait with some of the guys you have on your roster who have value. I don't want to see Jerry Jeudy go. I just feel as though he hasn't been used properly in his time here with the Broncos, and he's had subpar quarterbacks.
What would be using him properly look like?
Well, okay, that means get it. Basically, here it is. You know how Sean McVay used Cooper Kupp? Mm-hmm. Boom. You know how Kyle Shanahan used Deebo Samuels and Brandon Ayuk, with exception of putting him in the backfield, turn him into a running back? No, you don't want that. But the idea, when you have talent, you have to move them around. Justin Jefferson, who was in the same draft class as Jerry Jeudy, has amassed more yards. You know why? Kirk Cousins is a volume passer. They're going to find ways to feed him the ball. So much so, Adam Thielen is now with the Carolina Panthers. That's what you have to do. You have to find ways to get your guys the ball. And that's been the most frustrating thing for me watching his team this season, because I expected the Sean Payton bump because what he was doing with Michael Thomas down with the New Orleans Saints, I haven't seen that. And what I saw on Thursday, I get it, it's a short week, but he did not use Jerry Jeudy properly. If you go back and watch the All-22 and watch how Jerry Jeudy's being used in the screen game, it is awful. You're asking guys to block who get offensive linemen and fullbacks to get out and block for Jerry. No, you need to get him out on the edge and maximize his ability, because you're telling me right now that Nick Saban was smarter than Sean Payton, because down in Alabama, they found a way to get Jerry Jeudy the ball. So you can't do it now. So let's not reinvent the wheel. Figure out a way to get him more involved in the offense. That's your job as an offensive coordinator.
Former NFL safety Nick Ferguson hanging out with us, a connoisseur of all things Denver sports, a connoisseur of all things football, hanging out with us on the show this morning, talking about this Denver Broncos team, which is a bit of a mess right now, to say the least. What did you make of the Jerry Jeudy, Steve Smith thing? Because I got to be honest, I kind of took Jerry Jeudy's side of it. And I know maybe, I don't know, maybe as a veteran guy, as somebody who's been around the league and, you know, respect for the guys that sort of paved the way. But if I'm Jerry Jeudy and it's just before game time and I got Steve Smith coming up to me after he's talked all this ish before, you know, before he comes up to me and Steve Smith's coming up trying to, you know, say bygones be bygones. If I'm Jerry Jeudy in that spot, I'm probably saying the same thing he did.
Well, I'm right with you, Jason. Typically, we don't agree all the time, but on this one, we absolutely agree. I thought it was wrong of Steve Smith, and Steve Smith took it as an opportunity to grandstand, because I look at it this way. If you're going to apologize for something, you apologize for it. You don't start the apology, and then you go on to mention, well, here's what he said to you after you called him just another guy, whether you believe that to be true or not. Something came to you and you felt as though, you know what, let me tell him and then let me apologize. Steve Smith had ample amount of opportunities to apologize to Jerry Jeudy before that Thursday night football game. So when Jerry Jeudy gave him the British, you know, welcome, and we've talked about this before the show, Steve Smith took it to heart and he was upset. And I played against Steve Smith. He's a very vocal guy and he's not going to bite his tongue. So because Jerry Jeudy did not bow down to him in that moment, he took it as an opportunity to double down, to say, okay, well, yeah, my bad if I called you a receiver who was drafted and haven't lived up to expectations. Yeah, I mean, hey, you haven't lived up to those expectations. And then he said, and I quote, if a team calls me about Jerry, then I'm going to say, well, he is a little immature, I can't handle criticism, and he's a third-tier wide receiver. Now, if Steve Smith was truly committed to apologizing, why would he go in that direction? He could have took the high road like he was allegedly presenting, but I know that what Steve Smith was truly doing, because he grandstand, right? And then he, well, go back to the studio and I'm going to drop the mic, right?
And they encourage the behavior because they laugh and ha-ha and wow, this viral moment that everybody's going to talk about tomorrow. Wow. I don't even know why you should get a press credential. If you're going to behave that way, why are you even giving somebody a media credential if they're going to act like that?
But you know how this works. We see it all the time in this industry, especially with former players, which is awful that they take the turn and start talking about players. We even have some people who played quarterback in the NFL who were like backup quarterbacks, but they criticize these young quarterbacks like they had a Hall of Fame career, which I don't think is fair. Now, if a guy plays poorly, it is up to you to talk about that, but you don't make it personal. And it's too many people making it personal. And that's what Steve did. Steve was trying to point out something about Jerry being immature. But guess what? You walk down that same path as a veteran guy on television, but you use your platform to do it. And they ate it up and they loved it because you know just the way I know it. Even bad press is good press, but it's great when it happened on your network and on national TV.
Let me ask you about the Houston Texans for a second, because I don't know if anybody expected this in D'Amico Ryan's first year, in C.J. Stroud's first year. But all of a sudden, you turn around. This team's a contender in the AFC South. I mean, who would have thunk it in D'Amico Ryan's first year that that's where this team would be. And they are competitive every week. They play hard every week. Give me some thoughts on what you've seen out of Houston, and are you as surprised as a lot of us?
Yeah, I am a little surprised. I knew this would come maybe 2 to 3 years down the line. I didn't anticipate it that it would come this early. I knew the defense would play like their hair on fire because that's the way D'Amico played when we were teammates in Houston, and that's the way he coached when we were co-workers in San Francisco. When you look at the offensive side, I wasn't sure right away because Coach Sloik, this is his first time being a offensive coordinator, and you have a young quarterback as well. What it reminded me of, think about it, Zach Wilson's first 2 years with the Jets. Robert Saleh was a proven defensive coordinator like D'Amico Ryans, but you had Mike LaFleur, who was walking in as offensive coordinator, who also worked with me in San Francisco. But it's just a little different, and it comes back to the guys you have in the locker room. Having a veteran guy, you know, like Robert Woods on that team, that definitely helps as well. And then he brought over a couple of guys from San Francisco, you know, Jimmy Ward, who I coach in the secondary for the San Francisco 49ers. When you bring those guys over who are veterans and who know how to lead in the locker room, all of that is important. One thing D'Amico said, that he wanted to be competitive. Right. Yeah, you want to win, but being competitive puts you in that position, and they're playing well. Now, I will say this as well. When we look at CJ Stroud and how well he's performing, now people are now downgrading Bryce Young and saying, OK, well, maybe the Texans made the right decision. Well, let's put that in perspective. Look at what's around CJ Stroud, but then look again, what's around Bryce Young. I mean, there's no comparison in my mind, but if you give guys support at the quarterback position, they are able to blossom. When you don't, they end up like Andrew Luck.
Nick Ferguson hanging out with us here on the show today. By the way, Sam Yarnell, our friend who works on this show and will be coming up to join me in a little bit, says you were 2-0 against Steve Smith in your career. Did you know that?
Yes. Well, I actually, when I played with the Jets, we beat them, and also playing here with the Broncos, we beat them. So, I never thought about it, but reflecting on those games, I definitely knew that. And he had a mouth on him for sure.
Oh yes, he certainly did. Give me a thought on this Colorado Buffaloes football team. Look, you know how I feel.
Yeah.
I'm not stomping.
I know how you feel.
But I mean, up 29-0 against the Nerds from Stanford. I mean, you got to finish that thing off. And I mean, Dion keeps talking, you better get us now. He said that after Oregon. I'll never forget. You better get us now because we're not going to be any worse than this. Well, it just got worse. It just got much, much worse. And, you know, now you've got people questioning how Dion's using Travis Hunter, you know, too many plays. Does he have to only play on the offensive side of the ball? Take where we are right now with this team. Because again, I said, is this going to be a bowl? When everybody was going gaga about this football team, I said, they might not even make a bowl game, you know, and now we're looking at, and they really might not even make it into a bowl game. And I know we're going to say, well, before the season, we were saying 4 or 5 wins, but those expectations obviously were recalibrated after they beat TCU, after they played, you know, USC in a close game. Give me some thoughts on where you're at right now when it comes to this Colorado football team after the loss to Stanford.
For me, it's still a work in progress, because I still will go back to the fact that this team won one game last year.
Oh, here we go.
Vegas at the beginning of the season said they only gave them, you know, opportunity to win, you know, 3 wins. And a lot of games that they play, albeit close, they've been in a lot of those games. So the idea is, can you play 60 minutes? Because we've known the CU Buffs team to be a second half team. And then they showed in the Stanford game, hey, we can be a first-half team, but they couldn't finish. So this team has a lot of talent. But the one thing that they are, I guess, avoid of is having that mentality that when you have an opponent on the ropes, it is in your mind, you have to destroy them. And I don't think a lot of those kids have that mentality. And I'll tell you this, there were some issues from a coaching standpoint that upset me, because three times in a row inside the red zone, when Stanford was inside the CU Buffs red zone, they had 12 men on the field. It's like, if that happens once and it can happen, that's fine, but it cannot happen three times. And then, of course, the question all season long has been about Travis Hunter. That would happen at the beginning of season. No one's going to stop asking that question. Before Travis even transferred, that was a question at Jackson State, where they're playing both sides of the ball, was going to be somewhat of an issue. Now, for me, knowing as though Travis was coming back from his injury and game speed was going to be different, even though you're practicing here in Colorado, I would have eased him back into it and said, hey, listen, well, I need you more on defense. Or if I say I need you more on offense, put the other guys in. I mean, Jaquez Robinson is there. You have Kermani McClain who are there. Put those young guys in and give them some time. But that is going to be something that is going to be of question, JP, from here on out to the end of the season, whether Prime is using, you know, Travis Hunter properly. So it's still going to be an ongoing conversation. But to me, it was disheartening to watch them, you know, squander a 29-0 lead. But that's both on the players and the coaches as a whole.
Well, let me ask you, is there any question they need him more defensively when you look at the number of points this team has allowed this year? Is there any question they need him more defensively? I mean, they can score. We get it. Your offense is really good. You have an amazing quarterback. Sometimes they struggle to protect him. But is there any question they need him more on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, I mean, yeah, they definitely need him, but he doesn't play linebacker and he doesn't play edge rusher or interior defensive line. And it would be great if Travis Hunter played left or right tackle, but he doesn't. So you try to maximize your output as a coach. But for me, you know, once again, if we were to break down this game, there are a couple of things that I hope that they would have done that they didn't do. Amarian Miller, he was kind of that bright spot in that USC game. He didn't really have that many plays in the game against Stanford. And I'm thinking, don't change things up because Travis is coming back. You have a young kid who showed you as a true freshman that he can go out there and ball and he's ready for the moment. Continue to give those guys experience while you allow Travis to get some rest on the defensive side of the ball. That's the way that I would have done it. But sometimes when you have a guy who's really talented, it is hard as a coach not to put him on the field. So that is something that Sean Lewis and Dion will have to kind of manage. But Charles Kelly's in a difficult spot because they're not getting the average pressure rate as though they should, and quarterbacks have entirely too much time.
Could these two things both be true, that the Pac-12 is actually the best conference in college football? And yes. And that they're not going to wind up with a team in the college football playoff?
I don't know about that latter part. There's a possibility. Because
the attrition, because it's so good, the attrition within the conference might mean that nobody gets in.
But see, here's what's going to happen, right? Because we've seen that kind of play out in SEC. So what we're going to see that happens that may, at the end, and I'm including, you know, the Pac-12 conference championship, someone's going to have one loss or maybe even two losses, but you know how this works.
Is a two-loss Pac-12 team going to get in?
Yeah, probably not, but we know how this works because we've seen two-loss SEC teams get in because It is bona fide the SEC, which I think is a bunch of cow chips if you ask me, but that's how the College Football Bowl Playoff Committee looks at things. Even if you are one-loss Pac-12 team, I think you should be in. And if you win the conference championship, even with two losses, I think that you should be in. That's the way I think that it should work out. Every conference should be represented, especially if you have a good regular season record and you win your conference championship. But we all know Paul Feinbaum and Nick Saban, they're going to work with that four-letter network, and they're just going to build up those SEC teams, and I don't like that.
No, I agree with you. I was watching Caleb Williams even in that loss against Notre Dame this weekend. I can't figure out Notre Dame for the life of me, by the way, with some of what I've seen out of that team this year. But I'm watching Caleb Williams out there. Man, that dude is making some grown man. You could put him on an NFL roster right now. You know, if he was a free agent, you could put him on a roster right now, make him the starting quarterback. And I feel like that guy is just day one ready. Am I wrong?
Be careful with that. How many times have we heard the pre-draft analysts and draft gurus, as they give you air quotes here, talk about guys being NFL ready and they're ready to go plug and play, and then all of a sudden they flame out. Right. Remember Blaine Gabbert? Remember Jake Locker?
Just to give you a few
guys. Remember those guys? So we have to be careful, because we see a guy play well on a collegiate level, and we're thinking, okay, well, once he gets to the pro level, he's just going to dominate. The league is not based on one guy doing everything, even though we've been told, well, you can't win unless you have one. Yeah, you need one of those guys, but we need to break down the criteria as far as what needs to come along with that. You need a competent quarterback. But if your quarterback doesn't have players around them, they're going to struggle. I'll give this to you really quickly. Remember Tim Couch? Man, he was a monster at Kentucky. He was drafted by Cleveland, and then guess what? He freaking disappeared. Why? Because Cleveland was one of the worst organizations in professional football. That's why they have a laundry list of quarterbacks. You need to have the right coach. You need to have the right system. And you need to have guys around him. Like, we look at Zach Wilson with the Jets and like, wow, well, maybe he's learning so much from, you know, Aaron Rodgers. But it's like, no, you have a great defense. I know Robert Saleh. That was the idea. You play great defense and you get to the Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo. That's kind of what we're seeing with Zach Wilson, where people are saying, oh, man, this kid is great. Man, just run the ball, play great defense. There's an organization by the name of the Pittsburgh Steelers who only had 3 head coaches in the franchise history. Guess what they did? Run the ball, play great defense.
Finish with this just to bring it all full circle back to where we started with the NFL. I was talking about this yesterday on the pod with Sam. And I go through this revelation every year, so maybe it's not a revelation, but the margins are so small. You know, from a 1-win team to from a 1-5 team to a 5-1 team. Sometimes it feels like the difference is just this. It's not this chasm that we think it is. Perfect case in point, Minnesota last year, Minnesota this year. You know, they win all those close games last year, regress to the mean, lose all those close games this year. The margins are just so small. And as a player, you could probably appreciate that more because of the attention to detail that goes in every week as somebody who played the game, than us who sit back and fire this guy and this guy stinks and this team's underperforming. But you know, the reality is that it's a play here, a play there. That the reality is it isn't this, it's more this, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and that's what the league wanted. They wanted more parity. I mean, we have fantasy football now, right, which makes everyone pretty much engaged. And it wasn't like, okay, well, Tom Brady was with the Patriots, and he had a 20-year run, and, well, they're just kind of going back to Super Bowl after Super Bowl. But that's what the league wanted. They wanted parity. And it comes down to, at the end of the day, to be totally honest, will your playmakers make plays when you need them the most? Like, San Francisco looked like they were a runaway favorite to kind of go back to the Super Bowl and possibly win it with Mr. Irrelevant. So no Deebo Samuels, no Christian McCaffrey, and what happens? Then now Brock Purdy looks like Clark Kent, not Superman. You see, and that's how easily it happens. Like Patrick Mahomes and their dominance in Kansas City, they're just finding ways to win because of their defense now and not their offense, because offensively, they just have Travis Kelce and a bunch of guys who are still learning to play with Patrick Mahomes. So there's a lot of parity in this league right now, and that's what makes it, you know, really fun week to week to watch to see, okay, well, your favorites 2 weeks ago are not going to be your favorites right now. I mean, the Jets just beat Jalen Hurts, and I was like, who saw that coming? And the Jets had no DJ Reed or Sauce Gardner. So on my pick-em, I was like, of course, this is an easy pick. Let me take Jalen Hurts and the Eagles, and then they lose to the Jets. I mean, that once again, we're going to see a lot of this, and these games are going to come down to maybe 6 to 7 points.
Nick Ferguson, catch him on KOA Radio in Denver, does a fantastic job on all things football, the Broncos, the Buffaloes. One of my favorite guys to get to when I'm not being a pain in his ass. Always appreciate it, my friend.
All right, man. Take care.
Nick Ferguson hanging out with us on the show. Don't go anywhere. Sam Yarnell is right around the corner. See what he has to say about last night's Monday Night Football win for the Cowboys. How do you do on his picks, too? We'll find out. I'm Jason Page. It's the Sports Wrap on this Tuesday. Good to have you with us this Tuesday, October 17th, 2023. Sports Wrap in full effect. Thank you to Nick Ferguson for hanging out with us. Got more out of him today than I thought I was going to. Not in terms of, you know, what he said. What he says is always great, but just more time with him than I thought I was going to have. Ah, in the on-deck circle, though, is our man Sam Yarnell, hanging out with us on the show. What'd you make of what Nick had to say?
I thought a lot of it, well, really, my biggest thing was it was great that Steve Smith was a Jag against Nick Ferguson. I thought that was really the best part of it all. That's all I could think about for the majority of it. But no, on the college football thing, I always think it's interesting to get his perspective on Colorado, especially after that Stanford game. I want to know what his thoughts are on Shedeur Sanders going on social media and posting links to his merch at halftime. That's
crazy. That's something that
it's just
is somebody. It just makes me wonder though. Is somebody maybe running his social media and doing that? There's no way during the half.
They said it was actual. Like his teammates saw him go on his phone because they were up 29-0.
Yeah, it was 29-0.
And he pulled out his phone in his locker at halftime and started posting to his Instagram story.
It's madness. It's just madness. The situation in Denver, I think, is going to be fascinating to watch as well. And I don't know if he was taking, it's always dangerous to read into what somebody's saying, and I probably should have just asked him to be more specific when he said, you know, veterans on that team have to lead. Is he pointing at Russell Wilson? Because it's either him or Cortland Sutton.
I think when I heard him say that, I thought more to the offensive lineman who we discussed on the show a couple of weeks ago, who mm-hmm. said in the media he had been there for 7 years and all he'd done is lost. I think that's who Nick Ferguson was talking about. It's that kind of mentality from not necessarily the guys at the top, but from that's riddled throughout the organization. And that's what he meant when he was talking about change of culture. You need guys to lead from the top down, but also from the bottom up. Like, people talk as much as they do about leading from the top down, but if that culture doesn't spread through to the bottom, you're not going to do anything.
I'm going to rely on you a little bit here to sort of break down what you saw in the Monday Night Football game, because as people know, and as I've chronicled on this show, Monday and Tuesday nights I bowl competitively, leagues and things like that. So, and there's TVs on right next to the scoring, but I'm focusing on my next shot. I'm trying to figure out what I did wrong on the last shot. I'm looking up at the TV. I'm talking to my teammates, blah, blah, blah. So I don't see as much of the game, obviously, as you probably do, especially when you're sitting there, you know, with wagers on it and you're screaming at your TV. Give me some sort of take on what you saw last night between the Chargers and the Cowboys.
Well, it was a weird game. Both teams really left a lot out on the field. I would say there were probably between the two teams 21 points easily left on the field just between red zone turnovers and stuff like that. Going into the red zone and coming away without points. I think I can think of three specific times when that happened. Brandon Staley did not coach that team well this week. He never coaches them well. That's true. He's the worst. Like I said before the season, I thought it was him and Robert Saleh who should be the number one and number two hot seat candidates, and then Ron Rivera in third. Well, Robert Saleh got a pass because he took the excuse card with Aaron Rodgers' Achilles tearing four plays into the season. But boy, well,
they're also 3-3 with Zach Wilson, so he ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, whatever. Brandon Staley and Ron Rivera will be the first two coaches fired in the NFL this season. I'm almost positive of it because the Broncos aren't going to punt on Sean Payton after spending everything they did to get him. The game last night was a weird one. The Cowboys offense looked very proficient at times, and at other times it looked completely incapable, very bipolar in this game. The Chargers defense wasn't doing a whole lot, and quite frankly, their offense sputtered more times than it was flowing. I didn't like this game. I knew the Cowboys were going to win it. I thought it was a get-right spot for them. I thought they'd win by a lot more than they did. They still covered the number. You're welcome. Dak Prescott still went over his passing prop. You're welcome. They didn't get over the team total, but they could have if they didn't kneel on the ball there at the end, or if the Chargers did something with that last possession to make it a close game, kick a field goal to tie it up regardless. Two for three. We'll take that. 2-1.
Yeah. We will take that. I agree with that. And look, you know, you look at both of these teams right now, particularly the Chargers coming out of this game. And there's, again, it's one of those franchises right now that just feels like it's sort of spinning its wheels. And the only thing consistent about the Chargers to me is their lack of consistency. You know, when I watch them week in and week out, obviously didn't watch them as much this week, but the one thing I come away with the Chargers right now is there is not consistency on the level that you need to have in order to win beyond the regular season. And yeah, some of that's going to be put on Brandon Staley because it's a lot easier to change out coaches than it is to change out an entire roster. But at the same time, you've got to start to wonder about the composition of this roster around Justin Herbert, who obviously isn't going anywhere. He is your franchise quarterback. As you sort of try to figure out the way forward.
I think that I agree with you to an extent, but then again, there's so much talent on this roster that they don't even use. They have one of the best young wide receivers in the league, in my opinion, in Quentin Johnston. And last night, who was it? I think it was Josh Palmer who was getting targets over Quentin Johnston. I don't understand the way that this offense is supposed to work. They have one of the highest potential, most versatile running backs in the league in Austin Ekeler, and he's seemingly disappeared from this offense. Keenan Allen is having a career year. Yeah, sure, but he's not a reliable player. I don't know why we're going to act like he is. Mike Williams is already out for the year. Again, I just don't know how this offense, they don't have an identity. They're just lacking a true way to march the ball down the field like every good offense in the league has.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. Cowboy, you know, it was funny, though, yesterday. I was listening before the game started yesterday. And people were writing, I mean, they were 4-3 and 2 going into last night's game. People were writing the obituary on this Cowboys team. People were trying to project forward, look at the rest of the schedule for them. They might not, they're going to be struggling to even be a playoff team. I mean, people were really burying this Cowboys team last night. Before this game started, I don't know how much of that narrative shifts. I don't know how much of it changes with a narrow win on the road in Los Angeles against the Chargers. But I was astonished last night going into that game, listening to some of the rhetoric in the media, where people were basically saying, "Oh, Cowboys are done. Move on to next season." I'm surprised.
This is something I thought about so much during the game last night. We overreacted because of that San Francisco game. And we had every right to. We had every right to. The Cowboys played horribly in that game. But I kind of knew when we were doing it that we were going to be overreacting about it because it's the Cowboys. Not because they're some wildly talented team or Tony Pollard is a top five back. Because it's the Dallas Cowboys and it's Mike McCarthy and it's Jerry Jones. And at the end of the day, they're going to do what they have to do to win at least 7 or 8 games. Anything beyond that is kind of a bonus to the national media. To Cowboys fans, they should be undefeated every year. barring none. This team is far too talented to come out and lay an egg against us. And God, I keep doing that with the Raiders and the Chargers. Against the Los Angeles Chargers, they're far too talented to come out, and they're also too cohesive as a unit. I know they don't have Trayvon Diggs, but that defense is still a force to be reckoned with. I would say even without Trayvon Diggs, they're a top 15 defense in the league, which top half you'll take. That's a playoff defense. I didn't know why this spread was this number. I think it was a little bit of the books overreacting to last week as well, just like we did. But at the end of the day, this game was always going to be the Cowboys. And even when the Chargers got up in this game, Jason, because that's one thing you may have missed during your bowling match, is that this game was back and forth. And there were times when it would swing one way, swing in the favor of the Chargers and then back to the Cowboys. But you just always had that feeling when it swung to the Chargers in this game that it was going to come back because of the way the Cowboys were playing and the methodical offense that they were running.
We have an NBA trade alert, by the way. A Woj bomb has been dropped today. Rockets trading Kevin Porter Jr. and two future second round picks to the Thunder, who are immediately waiving Kevin Porter.
Yeah.
That was the other shoe. I saw your reaction when I said the trade.
And then you're like, whoa!
Yeah, then they're letting him go.
Okay.
Speaking of Porter, by the way. Prosecutors in that case, Manhattan prosecutors, dropped one of the assault charges against Kevin Porter Jr., acknowledging Monday that he did not fracture one of his girlfriend's neck vertebrae during that attack.
Oh.
Well, that just clears the whole thing up. We're good.
Oh, my God.
We're good.
Oh, he's innocent.
We're good.
He's innocent.
What are you doing, Minnesota? What are you doing, Thunder? You should keep him. Jesus. Insanity. Absolutely.
All-time bad human being.
Seriously. Just looking ahead at next week, because it's never too early to look ahead at next week's NFL schedule. Jacksonville, New Orleans is the Thursday night game, by the way. The other big story of the day in the NFL. Yeah, I know. The other big story of the day in the NFL, Anthony Richardson, probably done for the season. I hate to say it, man. You talk about these mobile running quarterbacks.
Oh, my God. He's got a shoulder injury.
Yes. He got hurt running with the football. I mean, this is what happens when these guys are put into a position where they've got to win games with their legs more than win it with their arm. And I get you got to be able to move around the pocket. It's this old-timey thing in me that says these guys can't win. And by these guys, I mean run first, throw second, or run just as much as they throw quarterbacks. You can't win Super Bowls with them. You just can't. You know, Patrick Mahomes is winning Super Bowls not because of what he's able to do running, 15, 20 yards down the field. Don't get me wrong. It is a sliver of his game, a piece of his game. But it's not the whole game. Steve Young, I go back to it all the time, the example of Steve Young. Steve Young was one of the greatest running quarterbacks. You know when he won a Super Bowl? When he stopped running around with the football. And a lot of these guys, it's fun to watch. It's fun to draft. It's fun to try and project forward what we think it's going to look like. How many of them win Super Bowls, Sam? How many of them win Super Bowls? That's all
so
I'm going to say.
I would argue that Patrick Mahomes is actually the quintessential running quarterback, and I don't have his stats in front of me, but I will say that analytically, Patrick Mahomes is the Steph Curry of the NFL in terms of passing the ball outside of the pocket. He revolutionized the outside of the pocket passing game. Him and Josh Allen combined actually did, but Patrick Mahomes has way better analytic numbers outside of the pocket. His EPA per play outside of the pocket is almost as good as his EPA per play inside of the pocket. And it's the biggest reason that he takes his team to the Super Bowl every year, because no matter how good or bad that offensive line is, he's evading defenders and he's using his athleticism to get out of the pocket and just even wait a second longer to take that huge hit to let his receiver get open. So I would say it's the exact same thing when you look at – it's also the reason, I should say, that when you look at the Baltimore Ravens last year, maybe 2 years ago, they had continued success when moving from Lamar Jackson to Tyler Huntley, to the point that Tyler Huntley was a Pro Bowler. People forget that for the Baltimore Ravens. The mobile quarterback is the quarterback of the future in the NFL.
Everybody keeps saying that, but none of them win. I mean, look, you're talking about Patrick Mahomes. I have his numbers in front of me. And again, there's a distinction to be made between being able to extend plays with your legs outside the pocket, outside, you know, outside the numbers, being able to get outside and still make plays. And that is a marvel to watch versus having to tuck it and run downfield. Patrick Mahomes has never rushed for more than 381 yards in a season. The numbers aren't that grandiose. And, you know, 358, 381, 308 this year so far, 185 through six games, which is actually pretty good. That's a pretty big number. But I mean, it's not like he's rushing for 600 yards or 700. It's not Lamar Jackson numbers. Like I'll say this over and over
in the Super Bowl.
I'll say this over and over. You're never winning a Super Bowl with Lamar Jackson. I've said it a million times, and I'll say it a million times more. You are never winning a Super Bowl with Lamar Jackson as your quarterback. You're just not.
Who was Patrick Mahomes playing against in the Super Bowl last year?
Philadelphia.
What? Who is their quarterback?
Jalen Hurts.
And what is he really good at?
Did he win a Super Bowl? Did I miss that? Listen, a lot of guys get there. I mean, Colin Kaepernick got to a Super Bowl in what, his second season? I mean, first season? I mean, sometimes you don't get back.
Another example of, okay, all right, hold on. Whoa. If we're going to compare to the Colin Kaepernick situation is, I would actually argue that if his situation weren't so political and he didn't involve himself so politically with the league, Colin Kaepernick probably would have won a Super Bowl in San Francisco sometime in the next few years. Because you really think that Blaine Gabbert is keeping that job over him? No, no chance, no shot. And Colin Kaepernick would have been Patrick Mahomes before Patrick Mahomes was. Jalen Hurts, how many yards did Jalen Hurts rush for last season in his second year in the league on the best team in the NFC that year? That he is probably going to lead back to the NFC Championship game, if not the Super Bowl again this year. Like, the thing is, the argument you're making sure exists in a vacuum, but the flaw to it is that running quarterbacks are the new age of quarterback, right? So all the good running quarterbacks that the league has ever seen, because realistically, yeah, Mike Vick was okay, but Lamar Jackson puts him in the dust. Steve Young,
I don't know. Peak Mike, hold on a second. This is an interesting discussion. Peak Michael Vick, peak Lamar Jackson. I'm taking peak Michael Vick.
No.
Yeah, no. I'm taking peak Michael Vick.
Lamar Jackson, first of all, isn't a lefty. Lefty quarterbacks unsuccessful. Lamar Jackson can throw the ball farther. Like the ball comes farther.
Michael Vick had a monster arm. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, but so does Lamar. This is something that people don't.
Yes, and Lamar has terrible and his completion percentage is terrible.
Because he's throwing to plumbers and fishermen. Plumbers. Really? You're going to tell me that his completion percentage is terrible when his wide receiver one for the vast majority of his career is Rashad Bateman? Come on.
Dropping a lot of passes this year. By the way, last year, just to give you the numbers, Hurts, 760 yards rushing. 784 the year before, 760 last year. That was in 15 games. That wasn't even a full season. And this year so far, this season, just 253. So he's off that pace a little bit through the first six games this year, just for what that's worth. And again, what it's worth isn't, you know, all that much. But he has 5 touchdowns rushing. Obviously, a lot of tush push going on there.
Wait, he's that pace is, can I not do math? 250 through 6. Mm-hmm. We're going 18.
It's a little
18,
off. It's a little off.
Well, by the way,
it depends how many games he plays. Okay.
Yeah. All
right. I mean,
if they're going to be leading the NFC by so many, I'm saying, at the end of the season.
Is he going to have to play late in the season? You know, that sort of thing.
It's a good point.
But again, when, and I'm not saying Jalen Hurts, by the way, will never win a Super Bowl, but maybe when, but maybe when he does, he's less of that running quarterback and more of a guy that, that you know, sticks in the pocket. And again, I might be wrong. Maybe he's the guy that, sort of changes that. Maybe he's the one that wins. Because again, go and look back. If you look back through history at the guys winning Super Bowls, show me the running quarterback. You know, show me the Lamar Jackson that's winning a Super Bowl. It's not happening. It hasn't happened yet.
Here's my theory, though, about why the evolution of the game is trending towards the running quarterback and why running quarterbacks will have more success.
It's being forced down our throat, too. I mean,
the thing is, it's been forced down our throats in college for decades. Mm-hmm. And what was the difference in college and the NFL that is becoming more the case in the NFL as well? It's the physical difference between the position players, right? Cornerbacks and safeties, defensive backs are getting smaller and faster, while linemen are getting more athletic and bigger. Linebackers are kind of in the middle. When you look at wide receivers, the evolution is the exact same as defensive backs. And when you look at running backs, it's more similar to defensive linemen. People want bigger running backs now who are going to run through people. They don't want the guys who are going to bounce it outside as much. With that evolution has come an evening in coverage, right? Now you've got running backs cutting defensive linemen who are almost, not almost the same size, but much closer in size than they used to be. And you've got DBs and safeties covering wide receivers that can run just about the same feet, just about the same speed, if not faster, and have hands just as good, if not better. Because of this, because of coverage evolving so much as it has, and the use of cover two safeties being at an all-time high, especially in the NFL, there's so much more coverage downfield. Quarterbacks are forced into running. It also, with deeper routes being run, creates more space in the middle of the field for quarterbacks to run. It's free, easy pickings for these quarterbacks. It's going to continue to be, and eventually it's going to take someone to a Super Bowl.
Well, you keep stuffing the league with these types of quarterbacks, and eventually, yes, one of them is obviously going to win a Super Bowl. So it is just a matter of time. All right, odds and ends to finish it with. Women's college basketball, the preseason poll is out. LSU, your preseason number one. UConn, you betcha, they are number two. Why were you so surprised? Where's Iowa? Where is Iowa? Clark? Where's Caitlin Clark? Well, if UConn's healthy, I mean, come on. There you go. Iowa's number three.
Okay. All right. Okay. It's all okay. Listen, that Iowa team is going to be great this year in women's basketball. Don't know if you saw this story, but they actually are playing a game in their football stadium. Yeah. That's going to be electric. That is going to be electric city.
UCLA number four, Utah five, South Carolina six, Dawn Staley's team there. Ohio State seven, Virginia Tech nine, and Virginia Tech eight, Indiana nine, Notre Dame is number 10. So that's what you got in the women's college basketball top 10. Baseball last night. Boy, the Rangers. Ugh. Boy, the Rangers, man.
Who would have thought?
Get hot at the right time. I texted this out the other day about you know, the fact that it almost feels like now the regular season, and again, this is a knee-jerk reaction. I get it. It's probably an overreaction, an oversimplification, if you will, to what we saw with all the top seeds going out early, all the division winners going out early, with the exception of the Astros going out early. But it just feels like the regular season has so much less relevance when you see these teams sort of steamrolling through the postseason. And it's like hockey, man. Ride a hot goalie. You know, you can get into the postseason if you're a Major League Baseball team. And if you get hot, your rotation gets hot. And we continue to see it. Great pitching beating great hitting. Who would have thought, though, the great pitching would be coming from the Rangers? I mean, their closer is an ERA of like 5.5. And now he's turned into Cy Young. He's turned into Mariano Rivera. The guy's closing out everybody. So it's kind of remarkable to see what happens. Phillies win last night. Your buddy Bryce Harper hit a home run. I know that probably thrilled you. I know that got you excited. Yeah. Oh, there it is. There it is. And finally,
stupid.
Finally, Showtime getting out of boxing after 37 years. We saw HBO get out several years back, and now Showtime. And Al Bernstein's a good friend of mine. Maybe I'll get him on the show. Al Bernstein and the folks at Showtime, no more. For 37 years, boxing has been on Showtime. End of this year, that will be no more. So we'll have to wait and see, you know, where boxing continues to go. I don't know. Boxing's a sport. I used to love boxing, but I just can't anymore. There isn't anybody that really gets me excited. When, you know, when Logan Paul or Jake Paul are the guys that you're, you know, that I constantly see on TV when it right. comes to discussion about boxing. Yeah, I'm good. I don't need any more of that.
I grew up in the weird era of boxing where like it was I didn't watch a ton of boxing growing up, but when I did, it was like Floyd and Manny.
Sure.
Kind of towards the end of their careers. And then obviously, like, I remember the Floyd Manny fight.
I was at Floyd Manny but I was in the overflow room. I didn't even get to be in the arena. I was in a room right next to the arena where most of the media had to watch because there was just too much media. And we did, it was like Super Bowl week. We did like 3 days of shows from Vegas. Right outside the arena. We did a bunch of shows. That was fun. It was a fun week.
So like, that's the kind of boxing I grew up watching. And then, what was the, McGregor Mayweather. That was like the first, that was the beginning of the end for boxing.
Yeah. It's so true. Like, it's so true. And I watched that. Yeah. I watched that McGregor Mayweather fight at Damon Bruce's house in San Francisco. Cause I was working at 95.7 The Game at that time. And he invited me over and we watched it at his house. It was fun. It's going to do it for us. This Tuesday edition of the Sports Wrap is in the books. It's you tomorrow, isn't it, Sam? Just you.
Yep. Just me.
See how that turns out. Look at the look on his face. He's like, what do you mean by that? That's going to do it for us. Thank you to Nick Ferguson for hanging out. I'm Jason Page. We'll catch you back here on Wednesday. Well, one of us will. It'll be Sam. It won't be me, but you could have fun with him. I got to go. Got a dog to go walk. See y'all later.